So the bench coach of the Giants is here, Ron Wotus. Well, good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, we got the microphone turned on. That's good. And as you were just saying, yeah, what a great day yesterday to have the 97 team here and keep pushing in that game, as you said, when Walker looked like he was going to be very, very tough to get to. And that just shows you, as you summed it up perfectly, you have to play 27 outs and believe. And we were able to not only tie the game up, but finish that one off in extra innings. We've been able to come back, you know, our share despite our struggles this year. But we haven't been able to finish him off. And we did last night. So a real big win. It felt great.
Yeah, a lot of things happened in baseball yesterday at this ballpark. Number one, Chris Stratton in the first inning. And I don't know, maybe there was a delay yesterday getting the game going. Does that bother a pitcher? They are that creatures of habit.
Yeah, and well, it can. I mean, look, every pitcher is different, and it'll affect them different. But poor Strat, he's had two starts, right? Yesterday he was delayed by the ceremony, maybe 5 to 7 minutes. I don't know the exact amount. And then his other start in Detroit, where he did another fine job for us. He was thrown in at the last minute because Johnny Cueto couldn't answer the bell. So maybe, you know, a half hour before the game, he was thrown into that situation. But he handled it well. He handled it well. And I know they got a couple runs early. But those are distractions. And those are things that you deal with as a professional. Yeah. And they happen. And sometimes you see a pitcher throw his best game. I remember Chad Zerbe. Remember Chad Zerbe? Yeah. He was with us in the pen. And I remember he was thrown in to start one day with about 10 minutes notice. A guy was warming up. I can't remember who the starter was. And he couldn't make it. And, you know, they pointed to him, and here he goes. And he threw like 6 shutout innings. Wow. So, yeah, it can happen.
You know, it's funny. I talked to Stratton. We had him on the show yesterday. And I told him a story about Jose Mesa. Remember Jose Mesa?
Sure.
Yeah,
yep.
You know, the relief pitcher. And sort of along those lines, and it was a game in Oakland, and he was an interleague game for the Pirates, and the Pirates are up like, 8-1 in the eighth inning, and he was in the bullpen, you know, snoozing. He was doing a Grover Cleveland Alexander in 1926, who was hung over in game 7 of the World Series, and they had to wake him up to bring him in the seventh inning, and he struck out Tony Lazzari with the bases loaded, and the Cardinals went on to win the World Series. But that's another story.
Sure.
So they woke up Jose Mesa, who wasn't really ready to come in.
Right.
And boom, 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 and all of a sudden the Pirates lost the game. And, you know, when you're not ready to be in the game, you know, as Stratton said for the Detroit thing, you know, he was told 20 minutes before the Detroit game you're going to start because Cueto was hearing bells. And not that he couldn't answer the bell, he was hearing bells, you know. So here's the thing, you know, these guys, you know, have a mindset. He did his early work, he threw, he did all this stuff. Now you sit down and, you know, you're relaxing, looking at your phone, whatever you want to do, and next thing you know, you're in the game.
Yeah, it can affect guys differently. As you said, you brought up a good point. When you're not expected to pitch in that situation, it's even tougher because you do all your early work. You do your all routine for a day off, and then all of a sudden you did all that, and now you have to pitch. If you know you might be pitching, you're probably going to be a little bit more prepared. But it does affect you, and as I said, it's part of what we do in being a professional, being ready to answer the bell and handle all these different types of distractions, whether it's something of that nature, something off the field or something on the field. And that's, you know, you have to be ready for it. This is an everyday job, baseball, right? Every single day. And as you like to say, you always see something different. So you got to stay mentally prepared for the game, no matter what the circumstances.
Yeah, keeping the mental part of the game is, you know, as they say, Yogi said, you know, the game is 90% mental and 50% physical. You know, he made one of those comments.
Right.
So, you know, the mental part is huge. Even as a lawyer, you know, we would be on the trial calendar on a Monday. You know, you'd go in and you were 15th on the calendar. So say, all right, this isn't going to happen today. And all of a sudden, the first 14 cases settle. And they come to you and, you know, you got to get your head straight.
Sure.
Because you're already saying, all right, I'm going to go have lunch at Original Joe's and that'll be my day.
Right, right. No, that's a great point. And, you know, it happens every day for the guys on the bench, you know, these pinch hitters, right? They're getting up and down, and, you know, they're trying to figure out where they're going to be used. We like to give them a heads up, but so always once in a while, out of the blue, there'll be a move where they're not expecting the hit. Yeah. And if you get caught off guard, your bat's not going to be the same. So you have to stay in the moment, as I said, every single day, and the mental toughness and the mental discipline that you need to perform in this game, I think, is first and foremost for most everybody.
Yeah, very good. Hey, Tomlinson, we talked about him a couple of weeks ago, the pinch hitting. Well, I'm telling you, this guy, and you know, you've seen so many more professional athletes than I have, you know, close up. There's something about this kid with the pinch hitting that he shortens the stroke, and he's got 12 pinch hits already. Come on, where was he, Manny Mota?
Great job. It's Tommy ball. You know, when we get Tommy in the game, we feel something good's going to happen. Yeah. It's not easy to pinch hit. We talked about it. Short swing, very simple approach. But he keeps getting the job done, and when he gets in there, good things happen for us. So another outstanding start to a rally last night.
There you go. And he went first to third very nicely. You know,
well, that's his other asset, right? The speed. He can run. He can steal a base. So he's a nice weapon for us off the bench.
Yeah, there was some bunting last night. I think Strickland had a hitter who wanted a bunt on him, I think, and eventually got the ball down. But it made me think about it, and FP Jr. and I were talking about it last night, the kind of pitch that you want to throw as a pitcher so the hitter can't bunt it real well. And I said to FP, well, you want to throw the ball up, right, so you can't,
right.
And or maybe in it, you know, we've seen that, you throw it in at the guy.
Sure.
Like that, and FP said, well, you want it at eye level, so you're just catching it with your eyes or something like that. So what's the best pitch? To foil a bunter.
Yeah, well, you know, if you know the hitter in general, he may be a guy that doesn't get close to the plate, and the outside corner may be open. So it can get a little more involved than that, really, if you watch the guy bunt on video and then take a look at him. But to FP's point, you're exactly right. A high fastball is always a tough pitch to bunt. I mean, you want to get your eyes down there with the ball, but if you throw the ball down, it's much easier to get that ball on the ground. A high fastball, a lot of times pitchers will pop that ball up. So that's a great pitch, and a great thing to do along with the bunting is, you know, these pitchers that square late, if they're going to wait till the pitcher makes his move before they square around, a lot of times you can slide step. Okay, so if you're usually 1-3 or 1-4 to the plate, and now this guy's going to wait for you to make your first move to the plate, you slide step and throw a high fastball, he's going to be late, and he's probably going to pop up that pitch. So that's one way you can go. Another way is a good breaking ball. You know, a lot of these pitchers, you know, whenever you throw something to the outside part of the plate, you have a tendency, you have that bat level or slightly up, but when you go for that breaking ball away, you have a tendency to drop the bat head. The bat head goes down, they don't quite get to the breaking ball, and they can't bunt that ball to third either, you know, because it's on the outside corner. So those are some things you can do, and you also want to know which side of the field they're trying to bunt the ball on, right? Yeah. If they're trying to go to third and you throw something 95 down and away, they don't have good plate coverage, that's a tough pitch.
Boy,
to bunt,
yeah, good,
well.
Good one. I hadn't thought about the down and away part. I always thought come up and in at him, you know, or up, it, so you can't get on top of the ball.
That's probably you know, the most obvious, which everybody in the game tries to tell their pitchers to do, and you know, especially with two strikes. That's a great, great pitch, up and away, more so than down and away. But down and away can work at times as
very
well.
Good. Outfield defense has been a real problem for the Giants all year long, and we've seen the metrics, and they publish them all the time, so I'm sure you're aware of it. But balls are sort of dropping between people. you know what I mean? And everyone's looking, you got, you know, it's the Alphonse Gaston kind of thing. You got it, I got it, Noah, you got it. You know, the old Frank Thomas and Yolo Tango with Richie Ashburn and, you know, crazy stories in the old Mets. But what's going on?
Well, we had two scenarios this week, and it always looks awful, and it happens. It happens probably to most teams at some point in the year. The second one that happened last night was a twilight ball. The balls hit in that time of day, 8:30, depends on the time of the year, where it's dusk and the lights haven't taken effect and it's hard to see the baseball. And yesterday, Denard Span lost the ball. He had his hands up. He couldn't see the ball, so it dropped between him and Hunter Pence. So that happens. There's not much you can do when the ball goes up other than the other outfielder has to be in the area. Right. And if he knows he's lost it, try to make the catch. The other thing FP will tell you, we train the infielders, you know, you want to point them out. We're always reminding them at that dusk, we point our fingers up. Hey, help the outfielder. The ball goes up, run and point the ball out where it's at to help the outfielder. So, you know, that got us last night. And then the night before that, I think it was, or two nights ago, it's just a simple fact of having two guys playing together and the communication was off. Panic and Moncrief, you know. Right. Carlos was not in spring training with us. He was in minor league camp. And, you know, the basic mechanics of how we work the pop-up drill is universal throughout the system. But it's a typical a young player seeing a veteran player wave his arms to catch the ball. And he wanted to let him take it. But the only problem was Carlos called for the ball. And as an infielder, when you go back, you don't call for it. You wave your arms. That tells you, the outfielder, I have it. And you listen. And if you hear the outfielder say, I got it, you get the heck out of the way. So he called it. So he wasn't quite sure of himself on that play. And, you know, I don't expect you'll see that happen again. That happens a lot. You know, when new teammates come together and they haven't had that play happen yet.
Yeah, Moncrief's got a nice arm, doesn't he?
Oh, shoot. I guess he's 96, 97 from the mound as well.
Exactly.
Is what I hear. Yeah. Yeah. He throws a ball great from right. And it's fantastic to see because it's a real weapon.
Yes.
You know, even because you stop the runners from trying to go. When he gets that ball, those third base coaches, they go through this report as Flan and Neff will tell you. And if a guy has a bazooka out there, they're not going to challenge him if he's accurate. So it's a weapon to stop guys from scoring.
Who are the best arms that you remember? And you can even go back to your days of growing up and seeing those arms in the outfield.
Yeah, well, a guy I played with, I had a pretty good arm there for a while, was Dave Parker with the Pirates in right field. Certainly, Larry Walker was one of the most accurate and one of the most deadly with that arm. And he could deke you, too. He pulled off all kinds of dekes, you know, and a ball, I think he's going to catch it, and he doesn't catch it. What a great outfielder he was. I mean, he really did everything he needed to do as an outfielder, but he was... He had the arm strength and is as accurate as I've seen. Raul Mondesi, obviously, with the Dodgers, another right fielder. Vladimir Guerrero in his heyday had a heck of an arm. Those are the guys that come to the forefront right away.
Did you ever see Ellis Valentine play?
No, I did not.
Well, that was an arm.
Was it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that the Montreal... he may have had, you know, of his day, he may have had the best arm.
Really?
Out there.
Well, it's fun to see great arms in the outfield.
Yeah, what a weapon.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll tell you another thing is a left fielder who gets the ball quickly on the line. Now, it may not be the greatest left fielder in the world, but if he gets the ball quickly on the line, he stops the doubles.
You're exactly
Ricky Henderson did that.
Sure, sure.
Bonds,
you know,
did it.
Bonds,
right?
Was great at getting to that ball in the corner and holding the guy to a single, moving towards the third baseline. You know, closing on the ball. You know, I'm sure you've had Flan on here, if Ned was on here, to tell you how important it is for the outfielder when there's a base hit to close on the ball. And the guys that get to the ball quick, once that outfielder gets the ball in his hand, then it's up to the scouting report and what kind of arm he has. But you stop runners from scoring opposed to taking your time to get to the ball. And that's first to third as well. You know, if a right fielder can close on the ball and get to it quick. And all those things come into play.
Oh, Johnny Damon was one. Weak arm.
Weak arm.
But he got to the ball and got rid of the ball. He was like Mazeroski. He was like a second baseman getting rid of the ball.
Yeah.
And Mark Kotze was another one.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember the way he used to throw.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good point as well, because you don't have to have a great arm to make the play, and getting to the ball and getting rid of it quick and getting it to your cutoff man or your relay man is an important part of the job.
97 was yesterday. The team was here. 97 for you, you were not in San Francisco. That was just preceding your first year up here.
Yes, I was managing in AAA. the Phoenix Firebirds. We played at Scottsdale Stadium, right where our spring training is. I was there in 96 and 97. I came up in 98. But it was great to see everybody here yesterday. I mean, I had a lot of those guys in the minor leagues. Yeah. You know, Rich Aurelia, Marvin Bernard, Sean Estes, Kirk Reeder, just to name a few. And then a lot of those guys that were here yesterday were holdovers the following season. So in 98, my first year, they were still on the team as well. And it's always great, you know, 20 years later, you think, to see these guys and all the memories come flooding back.
Yeah, it was nice seeing Rich Rodriguez.
Yes.
University of Tennessee. I didn't get to talk to him yesterday, but I remember when I first started doing the interviews in 96 was my first year. But 97, I really was doing more interviews, and the show started in 98. But Richie, he was one of my guys. I used to interview him all the time. Rich Rodriguez, the left-handed relief pitcher.
Good personality. Talked to Richie a lot. He was on the team in 98 as well. Of course, I coached with Sonny Jackson for years.
Yeah.
He was on our staff. He was here yesterday. And, you know, Corliss, his wife. And, you know, I've lost touch with him. As we said, you know, Aurelia, Estes, we see these guys on TV. We see them run apart. But the guys you don't see very often, it's really fun to have an opportunity to catch up with those guys, you know, after that long period of time.
We had Kirk Reeder, on the show with us yesterday. He came out to the public house. What a funny guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he does look like Woody.
Yeah. No, he's Woody. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. Yeah. He was looking for Ty Block yesterday. He's going, where's Ty Block? I got to meet Ty Block. Everybody's telling me he throws like me. He goes, he can't be that bad. That's what he kept saying. Here's the winningest left-hander in Giant history. He says, he can't be that bad, can he?
He won a big game before the Brian Johnson home run. And we did a show on that one, 2-1. It was a Wednesday night. Brian Johnson was a Thursday afternoon in 97. And it he got the team within one of the Dodgers. And Johnson, they tied the Dodgers after that home run.
Yeah.
But 2-1. Bonds hit a home run in the first inning, a two-run homer. And Mondesi hit a home run later on. And 2-1, seven innings of four-hit ball in one of the biggest games of the year. 56,000 at Candlestick. Wasn't Candlestick something when you had 56,000?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, really, think about it.
Oh, yeah. It's like a Led Zeppelin rock concert, right?
Right.
I mean, that place is full and there's a lot of noise. It was a very special place in its own right and a lot of great memories over there. You speak of Woody. Woody had a lot of great games like that. He pitched for me in 96 as well.
Okay.
In Phoenix. And I remember, you know, the team was getting close to losing 100 games. And we were in the playoffs in 96. And they called Woody up. He was supposed to be one of our starters in the playoff. And they called him up to pitch in the big leagues. And we were a little disappointed because we wanted to win the championship. And the team in the big leagues wasn't going anywhere. And I remember Woody said he didn't want to go. And I said, I always loved Woody after that. I said, Woody, yeah, you got to go. But I appreciate the sentiment.
Well, you lost to Edmonton.
Yeah.
Now, in football, they're the Eskimos.
Right.
And I think in baseball, the Trappers.
Yeah, the Trappers.
What was it like playing up in Edmonton?
Well, it was fine in, you know, late August. It wasn't very good any time after that or before that because they had like 3 days of summer up there in Edmonton. But, you know, all those Canadian cities are fantastic cities, really. We played in Edmonton. We played in Vancouver. We played in Calgary. And those are three great cities. But the weather is cold. Hockey country, of course. But they love their baseball as well. I enjoyed my time up in Edmonton and those places. The thing about Edmonton and Calgary, when you went up in the summer, it didn't get dark till like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. So that was a little bit different.
Very good. All right, Ron Wotus with us. A beautiful Sunday morning. The Giants had a good game yesterday. Well, before we take a break, and FP and Allie and Carmen have questions for you today. So we're gonna get them into this after the break. But I love the relay last night. First of all, Blanco's in the park here. So it made me think of Blanco. And Brochi corrected me, overthrowing Crawford. Scudero getting the ball and throwing Fielder out at the plate
right.
in the World Series. And then last night you had, I'm sure you loved it, Parker to Crawford and banged Lamb at the plate. And it's so funny because everyone in the park knew it. Everybody knew it because you could see where Lamb was. You could see where Craw was with the ball. And there was an audible noise in the ballpark that he was going to be out at the plate.
Right.
It was a great relay from Parker.
Well, we talked about, I think it was last week, you know, one of your favorite plays. It's not the home run.
Yeah,
it's the relay play.
Good.
And there's one right there with the anticipation. You see the play develop, and it's a big moment in the game, and you have to execute it. And we did, because if you don't throw him out, now you don't have that big cheer. You have the big sigh, right? Because everybody saw he was going to be out at the plate.
Yes.
As he normally does, made a perfect throw, and we were able to get the runner.
Yeah, the whole place knew it. I tell you, now the third base coach, I forget his name, Tony
Perezchika, actually an old teammate of mine with the Giants. He played for the Giants in AAA.
Yeah, and, you know, he, as I always say, that's, you know, the devil's corner, you know, the left field, you know, as a third base coach, you can't tell. But I imagine what was going through his mind, because everybody in the place knew it was trouble.
Yeah, I think Tony, if he had a chance to have that one back, he probably would have made a different decision. You know, by the time the outfielder got the ball and where he was at, I think I think he made his decision a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
He probably could have waited a couple clicks, and then he might have made a better decision in that moment. But I'm glad we were able to get the guy at the plate.
Yeah, very good. Exciting part of the game. And you're right, the relay, because we all can see it happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you can tell if he's going to be out or safe, and if the throw is good. And sometimes the throw is not good, and, you know, you had him.
Right.
But the throw isn't good, or the catcher mishandles it, or something happens. But it made me think of Scudero.
Yeah, I know that was a big
come
play
on, Prince
in our
Fielder
history.
Getting
yeah.
him at the plate. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a big moment in
yeah.
the game.
And that's back when, you know, you didn't know if you were going to have a collision at the plate or not.
That's
right. But ratchets this play up to another level. Not only is the play going to be close, but is a Prince Fielder going to run over the catcher? Are you going to be able to hold on to the ball? So it right. takes it to a whole new level. But when you have the guy out like that, you got to give the catcher a throw he can handle so he can protect himself and make that tag.
All right, great having Woe with us this morning. We'll take a break. We're on Periscope, Woe. You're streaming all live all over the world if you look at the camera right there. You're on Periscope live.
Periscope, huh?
Lori is probably watching at home.
She's... We're not going to go underwater somewhere, are we?
It's an internet term,
okay.
Right, Carmen?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. All right. We're going to take a break. More coming up. Carmen, Allie, and FB have questions for Woe. We'll do that when we come back right here on the Sports Leader. All right, we're back here having fun on a Sunday morning. Ron Wotus, Carmen Q, Allie Williams, and FP Santangelo Jr. with us in the bunker. Giants are going to have a game today, and Corbin is on the hill, left-hander. Got hit pretty hard against the Cubs his last start. And for the Giants, it is Samardzija on the hill for the Giants today. We brought fruit in today.
Yeah, I noticed that, and I've been stumped. I had the nectarine wrong and the peaches wrong. I thought that was a white peach, but you tell me it's a white nectarine.
White nectarine, and this is from Kashiwazi Farms, and they have, I love it. I'm a fruit guy. I like it.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in New York, and, you know, the only fruit I ever had was out of a can. You know, canned peaches.
Right.
We never had natural fruit. I never saw a strawberry until I came to California.
Really?
So I like this stuff. And Lisa Kashiwazi named a nectarine after me, Marty's favorite.
That's great.
And it's at Farmer's Market. They're in Montclair today. So
they're in Montclair. I'll have to make a buy there in the winter sometime.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of fruit as well.
Very good.
Yeah.
This is what we do. What can I tell you? It's a long season. All right, Carmen Q, a question for Woe.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is an unfortunate question, but, you know, we saw Belt suffer his fourth concussion of his lifetime the other day, and it made me think, you know, he's having such a great season. He's, you know, on track for more home runs than he's ever hit. Defensively, you know, I think he's having a Gold Glove caliber year. You know, I'm curious, when you look back at all the years that you've kind of coached or been around the game, what's an injury that you saw that you really wish you could take back? I mean, I think we all wish we could take back all of them, but what do you think would have had the biggest impact? You know, I immediately think of Posey in 2011. Maybe, you know, the Giants would have gone further along if that hadn't happened. So I'm curious what you would consider, you know, kind of a game-changing injury.
Yeah. Wow. There's so many. You know, you think about your 25-man roster and how important your regulars are to your team. And certainly the one you just mentioned is the one that jumps out. Thanks for helping me out with that. But the Buster Posey injury, right? We were feeling good about ourselves, and to lose a player of that caliber, just like right now with Brandon Belt. You know, now we lost Belt, and fortunately, we did sign Pablo. Ryder Jones is getting an opportunity to play, so that this helps these guys get the at bats, and hopefully something good will come of it. To your question, this year we're not going anywhere, but it's an important time to take a look at these two players, and they're going to have at bats now to show what they can do.
Yeah, good question. Losing Belt does open the door. Boy, it's tough to get out of the way of a pitch. It's a breaking ball. It just didn't break, and they hit him in the noggin.
Yeah, look, guys get hit. It's part of the game. You never want to see anybody get hit in the head. But we've all gotten hit, close to the head. I've been hit in the head.
Have
I'm
you?
Sure. Yeah. In the jaw. I got hit off a lefty, a cutter right in the jaw, went off my forearm, hit me in the jaw. But it's part of it. To Carmen's question, you hate to see these types of injuries, especially the concussion today. You pull a muscle. You injure yourself, you're coming back. You strain your arm, you're coming back with the concussion and the protocol. You just don't know when the player is going to get back on the field. And we've seen this, a few years back, we had several people in this scenario. So this is not a good injury to have in today's game.
Yeah, very good. Okay.
Process of evaluating a concussion from here on out? What are they going to do to make sure Belt is ready or not ready?
Well, they have a whole protocol. They're probably going to have him listen to this show first off and see if he can
make
sense of it. That's number one. But they have a whole protocol. The trainers, they go through their tests, balance tests, heart rate. You get your heart rate up. Do you get dizzy? How do you feel?
Right.
I haven't gone through the test. I probably should, to get a feel for it. But they have a list of things that they will check off to know whether he's ready or not.
Well, very good. Good question, Carmen. All right, Allie is up. Allie?
Yeah, well, going off of these guys are getting more looks coming up from the minors, and they're getting a lot more opportunities, for better or for worse, with the circumstances. But one of the guys that people are really excited about is Chris Shaw, and he had the midseason promotion, and he's been doing well and up and down, but right now he's doing better. But he has a few more years before he has to be added to the 40-man, as opposed to some of these other guys that need to be called up. So how much do you guys have to put that in perspective when you're deciding on bringing someone up that could be such a game changer for this season or the future?
Yeah, Allie, good question. The thing about it is you'd like to have players come up when they're ready to contribute and be able to perform at the major league level. And in today's game, we hear so much about prospects and what they do in the minor leagues, and they are prospects. But there takes time. There's a maturing process for these guys to develop. And you're really not doing the player a service if you call him up too soon and he comes up here and he really struggles. So you want to get him some at-bats. You want to get him some years under the belt. And then the evaluators have to look at his swing. Can he make adjustments? Does he hit good pitching? To determine this. Now, if they think the guy's ready, you have to have an opening on the major league club. So you have to remember, this major league level is, we're here to win games. And despite what's happening now, we want to win every game we can. It's just not, an audition to see what everybody can do. We're here to win games. So you have to balance those two things out. And right now, the closest players, obviously, is, Ryder Jones. Pablo was a major leaguer. We brought him in to fill the void. Christian Arroyo is missing out, because I'm sure he would have been back getting this opportunity. But you got to be careful. You don't want to bring a guy in too soon when he's really not ready to contribute at this level.
Yeah, offensively and defensively.
Yeah, good
don't forget
point.
He's getting a new position, Shaw, in left field, and his arm and all that. You got to learn how to play in the big league level. Slater's one that probably would be getting more time too.
Yes, but, absolutely.
But for his injury. All right, Allie, that was a good question. We're going to get FP Jr. in here. They give you a question. So FP Jr., go ahead.
So, Ron, last night, very exciting game, seventh inning. I felt a different kind of buzz in the crowd last night. Was there a different kind of buzz from a coaching perspective in the dugout, maybe in the locker room after the game, that maybe you haven't felt all year? And it was just kind of a really good feeling because I saw a great crowd last night. They were all cheering, and it was really exciting stuff.
Yeah, I think you picked up on that. I think that's accurate. You know, the first six innings didn't feel too good. You know, we're muddling along. We can't get anything going. But I think what changed that, obviously, is Hunter Pence's home run. That woke people up. Now it's a one-run game, and we got some momentum back. And our pitchers were able to go out and put up zeros and give us a chance to win the game. Of course, we tied it. You know, Boach had Buster ready at the right situation. We had him off the bench. Tomlinson, our weapon. It fell well for us in that game. And we were able to, as I said earlier, finish it off. So yeah, it was a great feeling because, you know, we haven't any comeback win, as you know, FP, is going to feel really good. But to finish it off and win that game, it was a great vibe. And you know, the guys executed, the bullpen did their job, and we came up with the with the run when we needed.
Go on, Parker, big hit for him. Good night for Parker. Les, he's an athlete. You know,
yeah, he is.
Can do stuff.
He is. He can run a little bit. Made a nice catch in left field. You know, got the infield single there because they almost got out of that inning. And you know, hey,
funny defense, wasn't it? Well, for Parker,
well,
if he hits a ground ball, it's over.
Well, we talked about it, me and Joe Panic. You know, there's a lot of shifts, FP, in the game today, and, you know, sometimes you have to pick your poison. Remember, you want as much range as you can, but when you put that second baseman out in the outfield and the shortstop stays on the shortstop side, that's the ball that beats you. It happened to us. It wasn't a game-winning ball, but maybe it was against Miami. You know, if you hit that slow ball up the middle and the shortstop can't, the second baseman's not going to make a play. So it's risky with a man on third to have that alignment because you're inviting an infield hit. Now, you know, like I said, pick your poison. If the guy hits a bullet into the outfield or normal ground ball, you know, more where you're playing, he's going to be out. But I think it's a little risky to get out there when the winning run is at third base.
Yeah, come on. I think the situation calls for it. It's a good point. I mean, that's a good baseball point for all of us. I have one for you, Will, before we let you go. Pitch outs, are they becoming extinct? Not a lot of base stealing, maybe, and everyone's so concerned about getting in a good count at 0-1 count or an 0-2 count. You don't want to pitch out. And the numbers say this. In 2017, there have been 93 pitch-outs for a pace of 139 in the big leagues. In 2014, there were 334 pitch-outs.
Yeah. Yeah.
In 2007, there were 790 pitch-outs.
Yeah.
Nobody pitches out anymore, right?
No,
you guys don't?
You're right. It's going by the wayside. I mean, it's still there, but it is cut way back. And it's very similar to, and I was talking about it last night, in today's game, everybody uses the safety squeeze. You don't see the suicide squeeze anymore. So the safety squeeze is taking over the suicide squeeze. Well, why? The safety squeeze is a lot safer, right? If you have the suicide squeeze and the guy misses the bunt, it's a double play. The guy from third's coming in, or the guy from third is out. It's not a double play. He's going to be out, opposed to using the speed. And I think the pitch out is kind of the sign of the times as well. People don't want to put the pitcher in the hole. They don't want to dictate that. I don't know if there's not as many stolen bases or not. You would have the statistics for that. But you're absolutely right that we're not seeing a lot of pitch outs in today's game.
All right. Boy, that is baseball on Sunday morning. Whoa, very good. Very good
well,
stuff.
Well, I enjoyed it. It's good to see everybody here. FP, say hello to your dad as usual.
Oh, yeah. And Carmen and Allie, good job, guys.
Thanks for the donuts and the peaches.
And you got that, and then plus you're streaming live on Periscope all over the world.
Yeah. Well, that's a first for me. So
all right, very good.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Have a good day, Will.
Thanks,
thank
guys.
All right, more coming up. KMBR 6A, the sports leader.
That's Ron. Nice Periscope.